There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We've got lifestyle envy on the Business Breakfast now because our next guest is in our studio, but really, he's in the middle of a road trip, driving in a van from Canada down to Argentina. Very slowly, he's been on the road for the last 4 months, and he's taking a bit of a sojourn, a bit of a detour by coming back to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, not just to speak to us, but actually to speak to all of you. He is Andrew Hallam. He's a financial journalist and the best-selling author of Millionaire Teacher and Millionaire Expat. We had him on the show last year and we were absolutely inundated with questions, as we are indeed already this morning, 4001 if you want to get involved in this conversation, because Andrew is a man who became a millionaire, retired in his early 40s, now does pretty much whatever he wants, but dedicates a vast amount of his time to making sure that other people can also have the early retirement they want, and most importantly, that other people don't take their money. Andrew, it's lovely to see you again.
Thank you for the invite.
Do you want to just tell us how you got to where you are today?
Well, I had to pay for my own college, and my parents didn't have a lot of money, so I had part-time jobs while I was in high school, part-time jobs at college, and one of the jobs, I was working at a service station for buses, and I met a mechanic who happened to be a millionaire, a self-made millionaire on a blue-collar salary, and he said to me, you know, you didn't learn about money in school, and if you learn to become financially literate, and it's not that complicated, you can build wealth even on a middle-class salary. So that was really the inspiration for me. And I'm a little bit lazy, and he showed me how compound interest worked, and I figured out, as he showed me, that I could have money working for me rather than me perpetually working for money.
Well, you became a teacher, and you were an expat teacher, which is why you spend so much time in expat destinations like Dubai, helping teachers like you were. How did you manage to make your fortune?
Frugal living, so spending far less than I was making, and I started investing money at age 19, so I had a lot of time to let that money compound. And then I ended up moving abroad, so I taught in Singapore for a number of years after teaching in Canada. And then just continued my frugal ways and my low-cost investing, following the mantra that Warren Buffett lays out to so many people. Nobel Economic Prize winners lay out the same simple platform. So I simply followed that. And I've been a financial journalist for years, too. So, you know, after meeting that mechanic, I was inspired to learn. And by the time I was 35, I'd read probably 400 finance books, and I've continued to read them, and started writing for finance magazines about 15 years ago, and I continue to do that. So I write a column for Canada's national newspaper called The Globe and Mail. I write a weekly column for a financial service company in Texas called Asset Builder, and just continue to enjoy teaching this stuff.
But the real way that you have become a millionaire, because you are, and been able to stop putting on a suit and tie and getting up at 8 o'clock every morning at the age of 44, you stopped full-time work, wasn't because you'd saved your teacher's salary. It isn't because of a column you write for a newspaper. It's because of the way you were investing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. So you have to couple two things at once. You have to make sure that you save enough money so that you can invest. And then you have to invest effectively using economic science instead of somebody's sales strategy that will essentially just pad the money or pad the pockets of the financial services industry.
You're going to be speaking here on Monday, and I'm lucky enough to have a copy of your book, Millionaire Expat. What's the main message you're trying to get across to people about how they invest?
Well, it has to be diversified, and it has to be low cost. It has to be a degree of flexibility, in that you shouldn't invest money in any company that will actually levy a penalty for you getting out before a predetermined time period. Now, I'm not saying you should be getting out, but what I find in the UAE is that the most expensive financial products in the world are the most commonly sold products here in the UAE.
Wow. And when you say expensive, you're talking about what they end up costing us.
Exactly. So essentially, the less you pay in investment fees, the more money you are going to make. And so there's a group of financial products that aren't typically sold in more regulated financial environments, and yet they're prolifically sold here. And there's a major problem with that because, of course, as expatriates, we aren't typically giving money to or contributing money to our home country's social platforms. And so if we're not contributing money to that, we're not going to be reaping those benefits when we retire and repatriate back to our home country. So we have to make sure that our money works effectively for us. And so here we are in this environment needing to save, and then we end up getting what I believe are the worst and most certainly most expensive financial products sold prolifically and most commonly to the residents of the UAE.
Without naming names of companies who provide these products, you do name names on your website, but what are the fees? Give me a comparison in terms of the percentage that they take in, let's call it commissions or fees, or call it what you will. Yeah. What percentage are these guys taking every year, and what would be a good percentage for some of the low cost, not zero cost, but low cost products that you've been investing in ballpark terms, Andrew?
Well, my portfolio has charges that amount to about 0.12% per year.
0.12?
Correct.
Is that because you are especially clever and are digging out special low-cost funds, or is this something anyone can access?
It's something anyone can access. It is really quite simple. And back to your question, what does the typical expat in the Middle East pay? The money that you contribute for the first 18 months, typically the typical expat pays about 9% a year on the money that they contributed for the first 18 months. And that money will attract 9% per year for the duration of the term, so that the first 18 months worth of contributions will attract total fees of about 9% a year. And then on the 19th month, the money you contribute thereafter attracts total fees of about 4 to 4.5% per year. Now, to put this in perspective, there's a Nobel Prize winner named William F. Sharp, and he wrote a piece, a Stanford-based published piece, called The Arithmetic of Active Management. And in it, he proves that on aggregate, investors will earn the market's return minus the fees that they pay. So if the market makes a return of 8% per year, investors that pay 4% per year on aggregate are going to be earning about 4% per year. So the market makes 8 minus 4% in fees, leaves you 4. But if inflation runs about 3% per year, it leaves you with barely nothing. So if the market makes only 7% per year, on average, the typical resident, the typical person in the UAE investing in these schemes will make nothing after inflation. So when I've looked at hundreds of these accounts, and what I've noticed, and I've challenged people at the talks, I've said, hey, if you're investing with one of these firms and you've been with them for 10 years or longer, you haven't beaten inflation. And if you think you have, I want to see it. And occasionally someone will say, I think I might have beaten inflation. Look, over the last 10 years, it shows that I've actually gained 12% overall. And I'll say, actually, if you gained 12% overall over the last 10 years, you've actually lost to inflation. Because inflation, let's say inflation in the UK has averaged about 2.2% per year over the last 12 years. So we're looking at a total of about 25%, sorry, over the last 10 years. You're looking at about 25% over the last 10 years. So if you haven't made 25% on your money over the last 10 years, you've lost to inflation.
Why do you think it's so particularly bad here? I mean, reading your book, and this is the second edition of your book about investing for expats, we're all over it. The UAE is mentioned sort of every four pages as a case study, as a warning, really, as an example of, you know, this guy who was working in Abu Dhabi, this guy who was working in Dubai, blah, 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 blah. Why us particularly? Is it not having the safety net of friends and family that you'd normally go to for advice? Is it that you're earning tax-free and you're not thinking straight because numbers have taken on maybe a different meaning than they would have had it at home? What's going on?
I don't think we can blame ourselves. I think what we have here is we have an environment where the regulations are different here than they are in Canada, the United States, and the United Kingdom. And so what you end up getting is you get a commission-based structure that's not legal in those countries. And so in the United Kingdom, for example, you can't sell a financial product such as this and make the types of commissions that these guys end up making. So just to put this in perspective, if you purchase one of these financial products and you commit to a 25-year plan, and let's say you're investing $2,000 a month into one of these schemes, the upfront commission to the salesperson, and he splits it with the brokerage, but the upfront commission is $27,000. And so this is crazy. $2,000 a month. So you've got $24,000 you're investing per year. And the commission that gets paid to the person that sells it to you is about $27,000. So when you have that commission allowable, you end up getting those products sold prolifically in these particular regions. Couple that with the fact that we have to save as expatriates because we're not contributing to our home country social platforms. It's a perfect...
So you're not eligible for pensions. You are, as you put it in your book, running naked.
Right. And so it's a perfect environment for the people that swarm into these regions to sell these products.
It's all about the money. It's all about the dum-dum-da-da-dum-dum. I don't think it's funny.
All about the money here on The Business Breakfast. Speaking to Andrew Hallam, the best-selling author of Millionaire Expat. Andrew, thanks for staying with us.
Thank you.
No shortage of questions coming in for you this morning. A lot of them, people wanting to meet you one-on-one. By far and away, the most popular question, popular might be the wrong word, that we've got coming in for us this morning. The most regular question is people saying, if you're already trapped in a 25-year investment plan, someone saying, I bought in, I was 21, didn't know much, what do you do? Is it best, as Jaco asks, is it best to get out of it or is it best to stay in it? What can you do?
Well, it's heart-wrenching because when you pull your money out, you're going to pay a penalty. And sometimes the penalty can be huge. When you've been in for 1 year and you try to pull your money out because you figure out, well, I'm paying excessive fees, the firm will take 100% of the money that you've invested. You end up with nothing. If you're investing or trying to pull the money out after a couple of years, they might take 80% of it. So it all depends on the duration of the plan. But if you're in a 25-year scheme and you've been in it for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it may be, the most important thing is to do the math on this and figure this out. And so if you're paying about 4% a year in fees, and you are, if you're in one of those 25-year structured plans, whether you know it or not, that's what you're paying, 4 to 4.5% per year in annual fees. And when you look at the platform costs and you look at the unit trust costs. And so you have to look at what's the redemption value. So let's assume that you have $100,000 into this thing. And you figure out that, let's just say there's going to be a $30,000 penalty for withdrawing the money. So now you're left with $70,000. So now the question is, would that $70,000 make more at, say, an 8% return? Or would $100,000 that you would leave in, presumably, make more at a 3.5% to 4% return? And most of the time when you do the math, and do it on your own, I mean, speak to your financial service salesperson, ask, hey, how much am I going to get back out of this? And then do the compounding math and do the actual comparison. So that's one of the things I'll talk about at Dubai College on Monday evening, and I'll take people through an example of that.
I've been to one of your talks before, and if you want to go and hear Andrew speak, it's free, but my goodness, register, because last time every single seat in that not small auditorium was full. The thing that really struck me dramatic, you got people using these online calculators to calculate what 2.5% actually meant. Doesn't sound like much. You give someone 2.5%, they're making your money, that's fine, but my goodness, when you do the maths over the long term, it's not, is it?
One text that's come in says, I work for a product provider in the UAE, and no one charges 9% on the initial period, first 18 months, or 4% after month 19. You're scaring investors with incorrect information that you're giving out. What's the story here? Because obviously IFAs are going to protect themselves and feel that their product is genuine. What's your answer to that? I mean, your comments earlier were fairly strident. Is there a middle ground that we're not seeing here?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, people refuse to understand something if their salary depends upon them not understanding it. And so if you look, this is all in the prospectus. So if you go online and you have a look at these prospectuses and you see that there are setup charges, and so usually there are annual setup charges that drag on the account at about 1.6% per year for the first 5 years worth of contributions or the first 18 months, then you've got the mutual fund fees. And so what the IFA may not understand is that the mutual fund fees themselves have charges. So then you've got sort of 2.5% per year with those. And then you've got the other platform charges associated with the plans. And so they're horrifically expensive, anywhere between like 6 to 9, 9.5% per year on the first 18 months worth of contributions, and then 4% per year to 4.5% per year thereafter when you total it all up. So many of the people that invest, or many people that sell these platforms, I don't think many of the people that sell them truly understand the tyranny of fees that are associated with them.
And also the reporting as well. I had a friend who worked for a fund some years ago, and he was telling me that, you know, a lot of people rely on the net asset value, the NAV figure that they get at the end of every month that they put together. But how much that can be manipulated by the funds to make sure that every month there's a positive NAV coming out?
Yeah, and I haven't seen that so much. I have seen the overall result as a result of market returns after the fees, or the fund returns after the fees. So I haven't seen that sort of manipulation myself when I look at these portfolio accounts. But as I was mentioning earlier, I haven't seen any that, and I've seen more than 100 of these things, but I haven't seen any that are 10 years old or older that have actually beaten inflation. And they're often lopsided because they're put together by salespeople. Very few of the people selling the products here are certified financial planners or chartered financial planners, so CFPs. Most of them are just one step removed from car salespeople. And so they'll often build also lopsided portfolios. So not only do you end up paying massive fees, the highest fees in the world. And of course, in my book, I reference all of this too. So that might be something for that reader to actually have a look at, or listener to have a look at. Look and see the references. Check these out online. You'll actually see that I'm correct with my assessment of those charges. But when you get a salesperson building a portfolio, and here's the secondary problem. One, fees are massive, but two, they don't typically understand diversification. And so to sell you on the product, they typically look at yesterday's winners. They look at, hey, what has done well over the last 3 or 5 years? I'll show my client chart performances from those particular funds or geographic sectors, and I'll sell them on the concept or the idea that I can make you loads of money. Have a look at these past performance charts. And so often when somebody tells me what year they started one of these structured plans, if they bought it in the UAE, if they tell me what year they've started it, I can often tell them what's actually in it. And that's quite frightening, because we should have diversified investment portfolios exposed across a wide range of geographic areas. But we don't typically see that. So if somebody started their account in 2007, we think back and say, okay, well, emerging markets did really well in sort of the years leading up to that, 3 or 4 years. So we had, you know, India, the emerging markets would be India, Thailand, Malaysia, Russia. And so what you'll end up getting is a lopsided portfolio. It's very much focused on emerging markets. Now, what does one well during one time period often does disastrously during the next time period. And so I've seen more lopsided investment portfolios here in the UAE than anywhere else in the world. And so not only am I seeing the highest investment fees on the planet, but I'm seeing the craziest portfolio construction.
When it comes to knowing when to move and not to move, I mean, you're a big person of buy the index funds, don't touch them, don't look at them, leave them there, stop trying to guess the market, you know, do anything clever. A couple of people have asked about buying in at the moment. Markets are high. As we know, President Trump likes to remind us how exceptionally well they're doing in the US. For someone who's not yet investing, though, it's fairly daunting to think, if I buy in now, is that just the worst time in the world? I mean, is that buying high?
Well, that's an excellent question. And there are sort of two sides to answering that. One is, well, I'm 47 years old. And during my lifetime, stock markets have hit all-time highs during 31 different calendar years. And so that's what stock markets do. They continue to hit new highs. If they didn't, we wouldn't really be making money. So when I started to invest in 1989, the markets were at an all-time high. And I'm really glad that I continued to add money. I ignored the media that was saying markets are at an all-time high, because the following year, markets hit another all-time high. So as I mentioned, during my lifetime, they've hit all-time calendar year highs 31 times. Now, the U.S. market, when you actually want to measure whether something is expensive or cheap, you measure it based on something called a price-to-earnings ratio, or the earnings of the companies. As something called the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio is a fabulous way of measuring the market. The United States is expensive historically based on that, but the rest of the world is not. And so that's one thing. Donald Trump may think that, of course, the United States is the only stock market in the world, but it isn't. It represents about half of global market capitalization. So we have emerging markets. They're not expensive. We have Europe, which most definitely is not expensive. We have the United States, yes, but the rest of the world is not. Now, the thing that we need to be aware of is build a globally diversified portfolio that, of course, includes all sectors, because we can't predict where the stock market is going to go. We can't say the U.S. stock market is going to fall because it's at an all-time high. So we create a globally diversified portfolio. Now, Warren Buffett says stock market forecasters exist to make fortune tellers look good. And all of the studies that we've actually seen on that hold true.
So you're, I mean, just to put a question to you that's come in, would you say to someone, wait for 6 months, see what happens? Or would you say, get in now, whenever now is regardless?
Invest as soon as you have the money, but build a diversified portfolio. And so I'll give you an example. Let's assume that you're going to be repatriating back to the United Kingdom. Fantastic. You're going to be paying your bills in British pounds. You're going to want to have some degree of home country exposure or a slight home country bias. So the portfolio you build is very simple. You'd have a British stock market index, which would represent the FTSE 100 and the FTSE 250. Then you would have a global stock market index, which would represent 49 different markets, 7,400-ish different stocks. And then you would have a British bond market index. So with three funds, you would have full global diversification. And once a year, you would rebalance the portfolio to reduce risk. So when I say rebalance, it would just be rebalancing back to the original allocation that you'd set at
the beginning. Taking out of the stuff that's doing well and putting into the stuff that's a bit boring.
Right. And that's the hardest thing for people to do, right? You're skimming off a little bit of the winner to buy a little bit of the loser. Exactly. To rebalance, to diversify, maintain that same global allocation that you'd started with.
Andrew Hallam, who is the best-selling author of The Millionaire Expat and The Millionaire Teacher. You're speaking Monday night, Andrew. Rich, you're tweeting the link, I think, on our Dubai Eye Twitter.
Yep.
If you want to go register, either check out Andrew's website, andrewhallam.com, or our Twitter or our Facebook, you'll be able to find a link there to the registration. Dubai College, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay, 6:45 tomorrow night. It will be packed. I am bullying people into going. We've had a number of questions in about investment advisors. People saying, well, come on, look, they're not all bad. Surely there are some good ones out there.
And so there are a few, for sure. And typically what you'll want is you want an investment advisor that will be your partner, and not an investment advisor that gets commission for choosing one specific type of product over another. You want an investment advisor who uses economic science, who uses peer-reviewed economic studies to build a diversified portfolio. And of course, that's very, very simple. If you ask Warren Buffett, he would say, build a portfolio of low-cost index funds. And of course, we know Warren Buffett is historically the world's greatest investor. And of course, Brandy, do you know how he is ensuring that his money is invested after he goes off to his ultimate reward? I mean, his wife is younger than he is. Do you know how that money is going to be invested?
Yes, but only because I've read your book.
It's going to be invested in a portfolio of low-cost index funds, much as I invest, much as most economic Nobel Prize winners invest. It's not exciting, but it will outperform 90% of professional investors. Getting back to your question, there are advisors that will build low-cost portfolios of index funds. Often they need high entry points because their margins of profit are really slim. They charge very low fees. And so often they require $500,000 or £500,000 or even £1 million to start. That said, there's one firm here in Dubai that charges reasonable fees to build a portfolio of index funds. And I believe, to my knowledge, I believe it's the only firm in the UAE that actually does that. And that's AES International.
On that subject, we have had some messages in because you've endorsed AES International a number of times. Let me get a specific message in, but essentially someone's saying, are you being paid by AES to endorse them? Do you have a commercial deal with them?
No, not at all. So what I've done in my book, too, is I've gone through a whole series of different financial service firms that you can use. And AES International just happens to be the only one that's here in Dubai. So I have an entire chapter that goes through financial service firms for American expatriates to use and non-American expatriates.
Let's just recap here. We're talking to Andrew Hallam, best-selling author, Millionaire Teacher and Millionaire Expat. You started as a teacher. You lived far away from where you were teaching, and you cycled just to save money. You enabled you to save enough money to eventually become a millionaire. Is this this a sort of inbred thing? Do you think people need to really watch it? Because I can imagine that in today's world, a million, if you reach that figure, magical, you sat back, it would disappear fairly quickly. I mean, do you still fly economy, for instance? I know you've got book deals and things, but do you still fly economy? Is it still in the head?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we don't make a fortune from selling books. Even if you have an international bestseller, if you use a legacy publisher, you get about $1 a book. So, yeah, that in itself isn't lucrative. But yeah, I still fly economy because it just doesn't make any sense to me to spend three or four times as much to get a nicer seat and maybe a nicer meal.
So do you stay in top hotels, or do you sort of bring a bike, stay in the YMCA and cycle to the studios in the morning and that sort of thing?
Very occasionally we'll stay at a flashy hotel, but the thing I find is that I don't typically meet fascinating people at flashy hotels. And so I love to meet really, really cool people that are traveling around the world on a bicycle, for example, or that person that just came back from climbing Mount Everest and they're on their way down through Kathmandu. They're not going to stop at the Marriott. I love talking to those sorts of people.
I think the reason I'm asking that question is really because there's a problem that a lot of people have. They can't say no to easy credit. There's the impact of jealousy, keeping up with the Joneses, living outside people's means. And we hear a lot of stories about people here who do fall into the habit of saying yes when somebody calls up and offers them an extra overdraft or a new credit card, etc. How do people step back from that and actually just, where you've got everyone around you living at a higher level than you, how do you ignore that?
I mean, that's tough because your environment can really dictate what the norm is. And so if you're living in an environment and hanging out with people that spend and splash out on a regular basis, then that becomes your norm and it becomes difficult.
But I guess you have gone through resisting that in the past.
Yeah, definitely. And you end up, I end up sort of hanging out with a lot of like-minded people. So for us, time and experiences are more valuable than material things. And so, yeah, we like the odd material thing, but we're more interested in having time because life is finite. I mean, we're all going to die at some point. And it's nobody really lays on their deathbed and says, geez, I wish I had that Ferrari, or I wish I ended up spending more time at Marriott hotels. They're going to say things like, geez, I wish I worked less.
Other hotels are available. I understand that you once, tell me if this is true or not, but I read something that you once wrote to Warren Buffett. You were looking to go to his sort of shareholder seminar that he holds every year in Nebraska, and asked him if you could sleep on his sofa. Did you get a reply?
Oh, I did. Yeah, that was a fun thing that I did with a bunch of students. And so I was talking to some students and we were talking about how life is short and how, you know, we should not let other people put their failures into our future. So don't let anyone say that you can't do something just because they know somebody who tried the same thing and failed. So I was talking about this and they asked me, well, what do you want to do? Who do you want to meet? And I said, well, I'd love to meet Warren Buffett. And a girl put her hand up at the back of the class and she said, well, my mom's head of JP Morgan Chase Asia and she's wanted to meet Warren Buffett for years and she hasn't had a chance to. And I said, well, with all due respect, that would be putting your mom's failure into my future, and one day I'm going to die. And so at some point, I have to make that move to do it. So yeah, I ended up writing him a postcard right there in my classroom, sent it to Warren Buffett. He got back to me, and long story short, I got my 15 minutes of fame. So a little piece written up in the Wall Street Journal and got interviewed on CNBC. So it was a fun experience.
But did you meet Warren Buffett?
I did. I met Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and we had a really great conversation.
Did you sleep on his sofa?
I didn't, no. Oh. I stayed at the Hilton.
Right, accidental bugging of hotels aside, Andrew, thank you for coming in and joining us this morning. You are going to be speaking Monday night at Dubai College. Oh, we're tweeting the link there if you want to register for those talks. They're free, but they will be busy. Also putting it on our Facebook page as well. Andrew Hallam, that's Hallam with two L's and two A's, is the author of Millionaire Expat. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.